making Des Moines a chocolate city again. It's Dace in the Afternoon on News Radio 1040 WHO.
422, and we welcome you back to the fastest 3 hours in all of local radio. You're listening to Dace in the Afternoon. Taking you up until 6 o'clock tonight. That's when the Hawkeye Radio Network takes over from there. But until then, we're going to have what we hope will be a vigorous yet friendly conversation here this evening between two individuals who are friends but on opposite sides of a debate that is raging throughout the state of Iowa at this time. Both of them have been guests on this program on several occasions, so they should be pretty familiar with our audience and you pretty familiar with them. Craig Robinson is here with us from the iowarepublican.com, and Craig's really the one giving up his own airtime here. So, Craig, thank you for that. We appreciate you coming in.
No problem, Steve.
Brian English is here. He is a spokesperson for the Iowa Family Policy Center as well as the Iowa Family PAC. Brian, good to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
I want to make sure everybody's sort of on the up and up and on the record about where everybody's coming from here. Brian, let me start with you. You guys have picked a horse in the gubernatorial race, right?
Yes.
And then you've sort of deselected one at the exact same time. Can you just sort of give us the summation of that whole process and why you made the decision you made?
Sure. Several weeks ago at the Iowa Capitol, we had a rally in support of passage of the Iowa Marriage Amendment. Because our press conference had been snowed out a week prior, that also included a public endorsement of Bob Vanderplatz and his candidacy for governor. During the announcement of that endorsement and in the written statement of endorsement, the Iowa Family PAC made it very clear that should Terry Branstad become the GOP nominee in 2010, that the Iowa Family PAC would not be supportive of that candidacy.
Specific reasons as to why?
Well, the reasons were outlined in that statement, and they were inclusive of a lot of things, not just marriage, as has been reported, but his record on things dealing with the economy and with his willingness to step up, and more on a philosophical level, more than just this particular issue over marriage, to more broadly use the power of the executive office to rightly be a check and balance on the other branches of government. That happens to be playing itself out in this environment with the marriage opinion of last April 3rd. And Governor Branstad has made it very clear. He explained in great detail in some meetings clear back in October that he does not believe that the office of governor has that ability to be a check on the Supreme Court. And that, along with his ongoing associations with folks like Joy Corning, who was his lieutenant governor and is continuing to be very active and vocal supporter of both abortion on demand and this promotion of sodomy marriage in the state of Iowa, to the point where she's hosting house parties for One Iowa and making robocalls into Republican households, instead of taking a step back and saying, you know what, she is outside the mainstream of the folks who I'm looking to get votes from, i.e. the Republican Party. Branstad's campaign put out a statement saying, well, we don't necessarily agree with her, we're awfully happy to have her support. And so there's an unwillingness to break with past associations in light of the current paradigm.
All right, so that's where you guys are coming from. Craig, what about you? Do you have anybody in this gubernatorial race that you are supporting or that you're not supporting?
Not at all. Just trying to remain objective and look at the race and look at the candidates. I'd like to go back before to some comments you made before. I don't think we're necessarily on different sides on this. I think all three of us would agree that we would support amending Iowa's Constitution to define marriage in a traditional manner. So I don't necessarily think that we come on this on different sides. I think what we're talking about here is tactics and the best route in which to achieve that goal.
If the primary were today, you honestly do not know who you would vote for in the GOP gubernatorial primary.
Well, look, if the primary was today, I'd be forced to cast a vote. I mean, I would make up my mind. I mean, I look at this thing and say I have 6 months to make up, not 6 months, 4 months and 8 days or whatever, 2 or 7 days to make up my mind. And mm-hmm. So I guess I don't put a timeline on when I'm going to figure out who I'm going to support in this process.
All right. You don't even have like a tiering process of who you like better than somebody else.
No, not necessarily. I mean, it's not, you know, I look at the, I think all of these guys bring something good to the table, and I have issues with all of these guys. And so okay. I'm working through that.
Okay. All right, these are the three questions that I think that this debate, as I've watched a lot of the reaction to the events and that have transpired, both what IFPC has done, things that Craig has written, stuff that's been said on this radio program. To me, I think there's really three core questions. When you strip away the personalities and those kinds of things, and you get down to brass tacks, I think these are the questions that really are the salient points here. Number one, is voting for a constitutional convention a risky or prudent way to pass a marriage amendment? Number two, is Bob Vander Plaats' executive order proposal an unnecessary step in passing a marriage amendment, and does it set the precedent for future governors to have too much power? And number three, did the Iowa Family PAC make a strategic blunder by betting the marriage issue completely on the gubernatorial campaign of Bob Vander Plaats? So I think those are the three salient questions I'd like us to see if we can get some semblance of answers to before we get out of here today. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
All right, let me start. Let each of you guys kind of make an opening statement for like a minute or so on where you're at on those three questions. And then we'll kind of let the conversation continue to roll throughout the rest of the afternoon and let you question one another from that point on. Brian, let me start with you.
You want us to just do a flyby of all three?
Yeah, just a flyby overall, just a general opening statement of where you guys are at on your side of this debate on those three questions.
Sure. Okay, well, starting with the Constitutional Convention question, which came up primarily as a result of an article that ran in Craig's paper recently. He had a discussion with Terry Branstad, and that came up, and it seemed like Governor Branstad was not only willing to look at that, but seemed supportive of the idea. We have, for quite some time now, since last April, considered whether or not this would be a viable option to get the marriage amendment passed. And from all of the research that we've done, from all of the conversations we've had with experts and the reading that we've done, it just leaves us worrying that it would empower folks like Mike Gronstahl and Pat Murphy to not only ignore the marriage issue, but it would open up the Constitution in its entirety for them to rewrite. And so we are not very excited about the thought of empowering people who ignore the current Constitution and giving them the pen to write us a new one. And so we are opposed to the concept of constitutional convention. I have invited Craig through email, and we talked again on the phone today, and I said if he's got information that tells me I'm wrong, I'd love to hear it, because our objective here is to pass a marriage amendment to the Constitution. Concerning the executive order, it kind of goes back to some of the comments I made answering your first question, and that is the executive office is granted the authority to check and balance the other branches. So we want to see a governor step up and do that. And as far as the IFPC strategy with a political endorsement, this issue is so much bigger than any one candidate. You can argue with our strategy. Nobody has argued with our analysis of Governor Branstad's record. And you know, some people are going to like it that we're behind Bob Vander Plaats, and some people aren't. We understand that.
All right, Craig, I'll give you about a minute. Go ahead.
Sure, thanks. I'll try to squeeze it in here. Number one, I support at least investigating a constitutional convention. The reason why I take that position is simply that the Constitution gives us two options in which to pass, or two routes, let me say it that way, to amend our Constitution. One is through the legislature, the one is directly through the people. If you are quickly to dismiss one of those options, you're limiting half of what you can do. And so that is where I come down on the Constitutional Convention. Look, I know it's risky, and I know that there's a lot of things that we need to discuss about it later on here. But it is half of the options available to us. In terms of the executive order that Bob Vander Plaats has proposed, I'm opposed to it, just hands down. Find me one place in the Constitution of the state of Iowa that gives the executive branch the authority to do that. I would take issue with Brian's statement that the governor is the check and balances between both the other two branches of government. Our founders specifically wanted a weak executive, and I think that I've been doing a lot of reading myself, kind of the Iowa version of the Federalist Papers, debates of the 1857 convention, which warn about empowering an executive too much, and I think we really need to go in and look at some issues there. In terms of IFPC's endorsement and how it's handled, look, I have absolutely no problem with their endorsement of Bob Vander Plaats. If they think that he is a good Christian man who has the worldview that they share, they should endorse him. And I think that makes a lot of sense. What I take issue with is that they took the opportunity to maybe criticize a candidate that might be able to advance their goals.
All right, we're going to get more specificity on these three questions with both of these gentlemen when we come back.
I like it, you.
You're listening to Dace in the Afternoon.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
On News Radio 1040 WHO.
Never miss a flight. Free shuttle service at Holiday Inn and Suites, Jordan Creek. Book on HolidayInn.com.
Craig Robinson from the iowarepublican.com and Brian English from Iowa Family Pack are here in studio. And when they are not making total undeniable fools of themselves in my basement playing Rock Band and Guitar Hero, they are debating the future of this state and Western civilization on this radio program. And they are on opposite sides of a debate that is raging right now, particularly in the Republican gubernatorial primary. And I thought it might be interesting this afternoon to get a third opinion on this. On our WHO radio newsmaker line is State Representative Dwayne Allons, who authored and sponsored the marriage amendment during the 2009 legislative session. And he joins us now. And Dwayne, welcome to the program. You're on with Brian English and Craig Robinson.
Good afternoon, Steve. Good to be with you.
So Dwayne, you obviously have a vested interest in passing a marriage amendment.
Right.
We have two individuals here who have dramatically different interpretations about whether or not a governor can step into the middle of a debate between a legislature and a state Supreme Court, or whether or not a state Supreme Court's ruling has the force of law itself. You are a legislator. How do you come down on this debate?
Well, my view would go to our state constitution, where it says that the all inherent power, political power, resides with the people. And when the legislature will not intervene on behalf of the people after this opinion from the Supreme Court, I believe the governor then is the other part of the separation of powers that should step in and still speak for the people and either have the legislature do something in regards to the decision, or if they don't want to touch it, which it appears they don't want to do, they should then pass it on to the people through the amendment process. And so how we are stagnated now or stalled out in this process because of basically four leaders, I think the people have the right to receive that opportunity for a vote. And the only way it appears that it can happen at this point would be the governor should intervene and put that pressure on the legislature to move it through the regular process of getting the amendment on the ballot.
Dwayne, how many people up at the State House share the opinion you just gave, including people within your own caucus on the Republican side?
Well, I'm not sure if I could answer that question directly. I do know that the language that we had prior to the one that Dolores Mertz and I submitted last year, every Republican did sign on to that language to have the amendment go forward to the people.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the timing related to how we felt this was possibly going to go, that the Supreme Court wouldn't make a decision until the interim, we kind of held back as far as resubmitting language, thinking that they should make their decision and then we could react on that. However, I'll tell you this, when Senator McCoy threw out a bill that really would change all the code related to man and woman to spouse and make it generic, we felt the Supreme Court should have a message from the other side before they made the decision, and it turned out soon after we did submit this language, they made the decision, and here we sit now, no action taken since that time on April 3 last year.
All right, Craig or Brian, either one of you want to ask Representative Allons a question?
Well, I guess I don't.
Go ahead, Craig.
Thanks, Steve. I guess I don't necessarily have a question, and I think that, again, to kind of communicate to the people who are listening here, I think Dwayne really, or Representative Allons, I should probably be a little more formal, stated it really well that, I'm not arguing that the governor has no role in the process, but I think what we're about to debate here is what role do they have? What tools do they have at their disposal to help force a vote and to help move this process forward? And so, you know, Dwayne, I know you're in a tough situation and you got a bunch of obstructionists that you're dealing with down there who don't want the people to voice their opinion on this critical issue. And so I just wanted to thank you for your hard work down there.
Thank you.
I'd like to chime in on that, too, and just say thank you to Representative Alanz for being one of the absolutely consistently pro-family legislators that we have at the Capitol. He's always been the guy who kind of quietly but very steadfastly represents family values, and he makes sure that that voice is a part of the not only the Republican caucus but also the debates that go on there on the floor. So thank you for your service and your representation.
You're welcome, and I'm pleased to represent, I believe, the vast majority of Iowans that would want to see this go to vote and not just be stalled out by three or four leaders.
Agreed.
Dwayne, can I ask you one last question before we let you go?
Okay. Yeah, I have to go pretty quick because we did have a vote to take here.
Okay, one last question. How many people do you think in your caucus believe that courts make law or that a ruling from the state Supreme Court has the force of law as any bill that you guys pass up there at the legislature that you send to a governor's desk?
I would be hard-pressed to believe any of the people in my caucus would view it that way. And I'd just like to interject something way back to our founding fathers. I found this of what Thomas Jefferson reiterated about a very important principle on the separation of powers, and he said, "We think in America that it is necessary to introduce the people into every department of government. Were I called upon to decide whether the people had best be omitted in the legislative or judiciary department, I would say it is better to leave them out of the legislative. The execution of the laws is more important than the making of them." And so I believe the governor facing a situation like we have right now should get right in there and put it into that position that the people are – there is no delay. It should go through the process as quickly as possible, and I believe the Supreme Court, in their decision, ignored the Constitution, and they should have said in their decision, either you, the legislature, change what's in code right now based on our opinion, or if you can't do that, you bring it to the people through the constitutional process as soon as possible.
Thank you, Representative Alanz, both for the work that both Craig and Brian noted and also for appearing on our program today. We do appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Have a great day.
All right, we're going to come back and get more reaction from Craig and Brian here in a moment.
I like you.
You're listening to Dace in the Afternoon.
I used to be with it, but then they changed what it was. Now what I'm with isn't it, and what's it seems weird and scary to me.
On News Radio 1040, WHO.
Wish him happy holidays. It's Dace in the Afternoon on News Radio 1040, WHO.
4:52 with us here in studio, Brian English, spokesperson for Iowa Family Policy Center and the Iowa Family PAC, and Craig Robinson from the iowarepublican.com. And if you've been following talk radio, the blogosphere, or the political class, both of these men are representing groups who in the past have been on the same side. But at the moment are at odds. So we're trying to find out exactly why that is, if there can be common ground, or if one can convince that the other is wrong and therefore they should join them and be right. So we brought these two in because at times they've actually been friends. So maybe we can have this conversation respectfully. We'll see. There's about an hour plus to go. I want to ask each of you the question I just asked Representative Dwayne Alanz. Does a ruling from the Iowa State Supreme Court have the force of law? Can the Iowa State Supreme Court order its rulings to be carried out by the other two branches as if this is the law of the land? Craig, let me start with you.
First of all, I think you're asking the wrong question. I think if you look at Article 12, which states Supreme Law, Constitutionality of Acts, Section 1, this Constitution shall be the supreme law of the land of the state, and any law inconsistent therewithin shall be void. The General Assembly shall pass all laws necessary to carry this Constitution into effect. The problem is, They did not say, they did not make law. They said there is a problem or a conflict within the code, and thus they ruled DOMA to be void.
And I would not necessarily disagree that the court has a role in determining the constitutionality of laws, and have said as much on several occasions. The problem came when the court decided to step outside the boundaries of that constitution and define for Iowa a definition of marriage, a legal definition of marriage that has never existed. And so it wasn't like they were striking down one law and reverting to what was before. They were trying to strike down a law and simultaneously create the new definition. And they went so far as to get the Attorney General, who is also constitutionally under the judicial branch, to threaten county recorders and force them to issue these certificates based on their opinion. Now, had they said, we think that this DOMA law is unconstitutional, and legislature, it is your job to figure out how to deal with our opinion legislatively, that would have been constitutional. Now, given the current legislature, had they been forced to deal with this, it's hard to say what would have come out the other side. I still don't think that their constituents would have stood for them legislating what the court gave us through an opinion, but at the least it would have been the people's representatives having an open debate on the issue. And so you're right to point out the court has a role in deciding the constitutionality of laws, but they did legislate from the bench, and they did act as the executive branch as well in forcing the enforcement of this opinion as if it were law. And so they acted as all three branches and really constitutional amenders all at the same time.
My question never argued the premise that the court doesn't have a role in determining what's constitutional or what's not. That's not what my question was. My question was, do the rulings of the Iowa State Supreme Court have the force of law? Can they compel the other branches of government? Therefore assert the premise that they are superior to the other two? Can they compel the other two branches of state government to do their bidding? Not just rule and not just give advice and consent, but can they compel them to do their bidding? Are the other two branches of Iowa state government and the federal government under the jurisdiction of the judicial branch?
No, we have three co-equal branches of government, and they stated that DOMA was void. That's what they did.
Brian, you agree we have three equal branches of government?
Co-equal.
I would say that the design was for the folks that are directly elected to have more authority. They are the representation
of
the
people. Well, just by the way that the court is set up, funded.
By the way the court has evolved, we have created three, what they say are three co-equal. And we've long since passed that point, both federally, and Craig, you and I have worked with federal politics too, but federally and in the state, the lawyers and the judges have created this system whereby they have basically elevated the judicial branch to a position of authority over the other two. And even if we could get it back down to a co-equal, that would be a start. But I would say that the founders never intended for that to be the most powerful branch.
You would disagree with that, Craig?
I don't necessarily disagree with it, but what my point is that there is not one branch that is intentionally in our Constitution that says is more powerful than the others. Are the two branches that are accountable to the people more powerful? And yes, I believe they are. I would say the most powerful branch of government we have is the legislative branch, and I think you would both agree with me on that. I'm not saying that the court has the right to legislate. All I'm saying is there was a dispute between the Constitution and the Code of Iowa, and they stepped in and made it void.
Yeah, and this came up shortly after the opinion when I was having a debate with Matt McCoy, Senator McCoy, and he said flat out, courts make law. And I just looked at him and said, that's your job.
Okay, I just want to make sure everybody's on the record, yes or no, before I have to go to a break. Okay?
All right.
Can the court compel the other two branches of government to carry out its rulings as if they are the force of law? Yes or no, Brian?
No.
No. No. Craig?
No.
Okay, so we agree on that. That's where we'll pick the conversation up next.
Welcome back to the Hy-Vee WHO Radio Studios for another great broadcast hour on News Radio 1040 WHO. Views expressed are those of the host, guests, and callers, not necessarily those of News Radio 1040 WHO.
Don't like this show the first time you listen to it? Give it a week. If after a week you still don't like it, keep listening anyway. It's Dace in the Afternoon on News Radio 1040 WHO.
All right, we're back with Hour 2 of Dace in the Afternoon, taking you up until the top of the hour tonight. Hawkeye basketball takes over from there. We've got Brian English in here from the Iowa Family Pack, Craig Robinson in here from the iowarepublican.com. Let's get to the let's start really looking in depth now at these three questions, men. Number one, is voting for a constitutional convention a risky or prudent way to pass a marriage amendment? Craig, I'll start with you.
Thanks, Steve. You know, I think what's ironic about this question and about, you know, this route specifically is this, is that the reason we even have this this option afforded to us is because back in the 1850s, you had a legislature who did not want to take up a banking issue. They didn't want to admit banking into the state. The people were upset and tried to get their legislative body to act. They refused. They finally get it passed, and the governor vetoes it. And then they pass it again, and he vetoes it again. And so when they had the Constitutional Convention of 1857, they said, we need to provide an avenue for the people to go around the legislature to amend their constitution. So I think it's interesting that we find ourselves in a very similar position today. I also think that we first must agree on how can we amend our constitution. There are two ways afforded to us. There's a legislative route where they can pass an amendment, which Brian's group is rightfully fighting for. It has to pass in two separate general assemblies, so an election is going to have to take place in between them. Mm-hmm. And then the legislature could call a constitutional convention at any time. And the other route is this one. And I'm a little, you know, bewildered why we want to totally dismiss this so quickly when it might be our only option. And one of the things I hope we can do this hour is to game plan, to look ahead and see what our options are going to be under certain scenarios. How do we advance this amendment if we don't have a proper route to explore to pass a marriage amendment? You know, and I know, Brian, one of your arguments about and concerns about the marriage amendment or the constitutional convention is that Mike Gronstall will write the rules for it. But I hope you realize that if Mike Gronstall writes the rules for the convention, that also means he's going to obstruct any attempt that you currently have to pass a marriage amendment. So if Mike Gronstall, but if Mike Gronstall is the leader in 2011,
right?
If he is the leader of his chamber in 2011, please tell me how we can advance a constitutional amendment that we can't do right now. And why not explore the option of the people? I think there comes a time. If all power is inherent to the people, why don't we trust them to amend their constitution through a constitutional convention?
Okay, Brian?
The last question there, Craig, is excellent, and I want to get to it. But first, I want to touch on a couple of things that you've said up to this point. And twice now, you've said, let's not quickly dismiss the option of a constitutional convention. And in the email exchanges that we've had and in the discussion we've had yet on this program, it may appear as a quick dismissal. Like I said in the opening segment, we've been looking at this since April the 4th. The Constitutional Convention comes up every 10 years on the ballot. We knew it was coming up, and that was really the first thing that we looked at as a potential option for us to put our efforts behind. And after lengthy discussion and research, we have dismissed it. This argument that it's an avenue for the people to go around the legislature, that I've read the same stuff I'm sure you've read about the Constitutional Convention back in the 1800s that rewrote the Iowa Constitution, and the environment we find ourselves in is nothing like the environment that they found themselves in. It, depending on how the legislature would decide to elect delegates, and during the last Constitutional Convention, they basically set it up so that each of the Senate districts was a delegate district for the Constitutional Convention. There were elections. You look at how much money is spent on each of the Senate races to become an Iowa senator, and you think of the specter of being able to completely and totally rewrite a state constitution, and now you think about the money and the time and the manipulation that would go into electing those delegates, not to mention I've looked inside and out, and the legislature does set up the rules for election of delegates. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be the way they did it before. Mike Gronstahl and Pat Murphy, given the current makeup, and that's what we have to work with, would be in charge of drafting the resolution, the act in the legislature to define how those delegates would be elected and how the Constitution, the new Constitution, would be ratified, not necessarily allowing us to vote on each amendment or change.
But you're assuming they're going to maintain their leadership roles.
I'm assuming that regardless of whether they're in the majority or the minority, they're going to play a role in how this thing is going to be shaped. Now, if we could take a look at the next election and see beyond that with some certainty, I mean, if we've got guys like Dwayne Allons setting up the rules, I have a lot more faith in him. But I stood over.
Hey, I'd love to
I
play
stood
safe.
Over in I stood over in Council Bluffs this weekend and watched Mike Gronstahl talk to his constituents and blame the fact that we don't have a marriage amendment on the floor on the legislature. This is the guy who's been the biggest obstructionist in the whole process, and he's willing to go home and lie to his constituents.
Can we game plan this? Because I think it sounds like you've thought this out as well. I mean, let's game plan it.
Your question was, what if Gronstahl's still in charge after the next election, and how does that change anything? And I think that if anything is apparent at this point, we're willing to take extreme measures to engage. And so if you can convince me that this is the way to go, I've told you this on the phone, to help me to understand how that's a good
idea. What other extreme measures are described in the Constitution that allows you to pass a marriage amendment? Regardless of the executive order or not, you still have to come back down to this and say we have to – the reason we're at odds, the reason that the code is in violation of the Constitution is because nowhere in the Constitution is marriage actually defined, which is why we want to amend our Constitution.
Yeah.
That's still going to be the case if an executive order is used or whatever. So how do we amend the Constitution if Mike Gronstahl is still Senate Majority Leader? How do we do it?
Let's use the right language, because I'm talking about an amendment that may take the homosexual activists spent 7 years setting this up to perpetrate this on the state. If we want to amend the Constitution, we may have to elect new representatives and senators in several cycles.
Are we doing that now?
Yes.
Okay.
And if we go to the Constitutional Convention, I just want to make sure we're on the same page. Do you understand that opens the entire Constitution up? They can rewrite the entire thing. They can start with a blank page.
And the people of Iowa know they start with the existing document in which they would draft amendments from.
That is not
and then
the
every,
way the Constitution
And every
reads.
Amendment, and no. every amendment, if there's more than one amendment to the Constitution, each of those will be given to the people to vote on.
That's not what a Constitutional Convention does.
Here's
a Constitutional Convention opens the entire Constitution up for a complete redraft. If you look at the notes from these guys that wrote the one that we're under now, when they met in convention, Mr. Hall from here in Des Moines, they were trying to get him to take an oath to abide by the current Iowa Constitution. He said, "Can't happen. I understand that we came here for the very purpose of altering and violating the Constitution, the Constitution of the state of Iowa." Mr. Parvin, who was a delegate, he said, "We're here to amend, overthrow, disregard, and change the present Constitution."
Okay, I'm out of time, but Craig, I want to give you some time to get to one last word.
I have one question for you. If this is the case, if this environment that we're so scared of activists like Tim Gill having a great influence on this, please tell me how 44, a minority of House members, were able to stop pretty much every bad piece of labor legislation that came through the pike. How were we able to save federal deductibility? Why
you
were we able to
know
do those
what
things?
The rules
we
will
were
be
able.
Like.
No,
you have
we
no
were.
Idea.
No, there are no filibuster rules. We were able to succeed because we empowered the people to stand up. And why you guys don't want our people to stand up and be part of this process is beyond
up,
me.
And they're engaged.
But you're scared to let them talk.
All right, I've got to go. We'll come back with more. Stay tuned.
I like you.
You're listening to Dace in the Afternoon.
You are a sad, strange little man, and you have my pity.
On News Radio 1040, WH. Moderate Arab nation. Gay marriage. Local celebrity. Just a few of our favorite oxymorons here on Dace in the Afternoon on News Radio 1040, WHO.
525, Craig Robinson here with us in studio alongside Brian English from Iowa Family Pack and Craig Robinson with the iowarepublican.com. Can I ask one follow-up question in the conversation you guys were having about a constitutional convention? Mm-hmm. Because unlike some of my libertarian buddies at the Campaign for Liberty and other places, I'm not against amendments. I think our founders gave us the opportunity to amend the Constitution for a reason, and it was for these very situations. I agree with Craig on that. That's why they gave us this when we have an obstinate political class, so that there was a mechanism in place to put the, give the power back to the people. That's why I've never totally shut the door on Craig's idea of a constitutional convention, although I'm sympathetic with Brian's idea, which is if we can't get him to enforce the Constitution we currently have, heaven forbid you'll get him to enforce the new one.
They'll enforce it. I'm just afraid of what they'll write.
What they'll enforce in there. Yeah. Now, here's my issue with this. Some of Craig's argument about the Constitutional Convention I actually agree with. But the problem is I don't trust the current leadership of the Republican Party to even fight for this with a convention. Paul McKinley did not tell many listeners in this audience the truth when he told them last spring there was no procedure for suspending the rules in the Senate. That is just not true. Not to mention the fact we already gave the Republicans majorities in both houses and they wouldn't pass a marriage amendment then. We can't even get Republican legislators to stand up in the legislature and say, you know, the court voided the law. We don't have a law. We must act. We can't issue marriage licenses in this state until we define what a marriage actually even is. Okay, Dwayne Allons comes on here last hour and says the majority of the Republicans in his caucus, he doesn't think any of them would believe that the court has the right to make the law. Yet if they don't think that, then why are they behaving in the legislature as if they do? They're functionally acquiescing to the idea that the courts make the law. So what makes me nervous, even though I'm sympathetic to some of Craig's arguments on a convention, what makes me nervous is I got one party that I know is going to shaft me if we go to that process. If I make it an effort to give control of the other party, they have never once at all in the last 10 years demonstrated any temerity on this issue at all. None. And we got Republicans running for Congress in my district who voted for anti-bullying bills and gay rights legislation. You see my point? How do I know if I go all in on a risky move? I'm not opposed to risky moves. You know that. But if I go all in on this move, how do I know that the other party that's supposed to be on my side on this one's actually going to be in the foxhole with me?
Because you know what, Steve? I'm not betting on the Republican Party on this or the other party on this. I'm betting on the people. I think that the people are with us on this. We live in an environment today which is fascinating, where we have Tea Party groups that have all these little niches that they're carving out. We live in an environment right now, this time, right before we have an opportunity to vote on this, there are people out there who are mad as hell, and they don't give a rip about party affiliation, and those are the people that I'm trying to talk to. I want those people to stand up. I want people to be all over this issue, all over this convention and the drafting of the rules all the way through. And you know what? If they want to pass a bunch of liberal stuff, if they want to pass a bunch of stuff, a bunch of amendments that the people of Iowa are going to reject, let them. Because you know what? The people of Iowa will laugh them out of office.
But they don't get a line item veto.
They vote on every amendment.
No.
Yes, Brian, they do.
They set up their own rules.
And vote the people of Iowa, when it goes to them
based
after.
Based on what?
Based on what? The Constitution of the state.
The Constitution of the state says
if more than one amendment is made to the Constitution.
Where?
Brian, it's in the.
No, it says that they get to make their own rules.
No. After the convention is met, and they have agreed, every change to the. Any additional amendments go to the people of Iowa to be voted on individually. I am willing to let the people of Iowa vote
for that.
Go to the website.
I've got it right here in front of me.
Go to state of Iowa.
No, I'm looking at it. They can set this up so that it's an up or down vote of the whole thing. And that's how
I'm talking after the convention. I'm not talking about the convention. I'm talking that after
the
convention meets,
process.
The people of Iowa ratify it. That is the amendment. Brian, listen. That is the amendment that was made.
That was the
amendment that was drafted in the 1960s that added that to the 1857.
No, yes. Look at the discussion that happened in that convention. They understood, the people that wrote our current Constitution in that convention understood that as soon as they met, it was all on the table. And so how can you enforce one constitution in the process of, because it's not just amendments. They can rewrite the whole thing. It could be completely different. than what we've had before. Now, if they just met in convention and decided to bring a couple of amendments, they can do that. They can absolutely do that. But if, they let, also let, have let the option to write the entire Constitution.
Section 3, Constitutional Convention. If two or more amendments shall be submitted at the same time, they shall be submitted in such...
Amendments.
But that's what they are making.
Not in a constitutional convention. Not in a
This is in the section that says constitutional convention.
So if they came in and all they do is amend the current constitution.
Well, read the whole section to the people. Section 3.
You read the whole
Article
section.
Article 10.
it's a long
let
section.
Let me try to narrow this down. From what I understand, Craig, you're saying that each amendment that they would pass out of
each
the convention.
Each change to the constitution.
Each amendment would go to the people, okay, for up or down vote. Brian, you're saying that they can just totally nuke the entire Constitution and rewrite
if they bring amendments to the Constitution. That's true. But a constitutional convention, by definition, and backed up with the comments from the people that met in the last constitutional convention, it, by definition, opens the entire Constitution up to being rewritten. Instead of amending the current Constitution, they could bring to the people an entirely new Constitution that hopefully would define marriage as one man, one woman, maybe would constitutionally require the government to spend a certain amount underneath the projected revenues. I mean, we could get a lot of good things. We could get a Second Amendment. We could get all sorts of things. But
it says
but
in here,
also
shall
have,
there be a convention to revise the Constitution and propose amendment and amendments to the same?
And so it all
so
of
where
those,
does it where does it
those,
say that we're going to flush this thing down the toilet?
Options.
Where does it
all
say we're going to flush
those,
it down the toilet?
All of those are options.
But no, shall there be a convention to revise the Constitution and propose amendment or amendments to the same?
Real quick, is there anything in there that says they can? They explicitly says they can only amend the Constitution, not that they can actually change the wording of the original Constitution. Is there anything that says that?
I don't see where it says they can flush the whole thing.
But there isn't anything that says they can't. We're dealing with liberals here. Okay, even if you tell them specifically what they can't do, they will try to do it anyway. And they certainly will try to do it if you don't specifically tell them what they can't
and
do.
And based on the discussions that happened in the environment where this current Constitution was written, the people that wrote this Constitution that we now live under, when they met to do this, they all agreed the process involved, quote, amending or overthrowing or disregarding.
That's not in our Constitution.
But that is the way it works on the federal level and here. A constitutional convention is to write a constitution.
All right, we'll come back with more. Stay tuned.
I like you.
You're listening to Dace in the Afternoon.
And like that, he's gone.
On News Radio 1040, WHO.
Valentine's packages at the Holiday Inn and Suites Jordan Creek include dinner at Johnny's. Call today.
All right, 5:37. We're at an impasse on the constitutional convention question. There's a debate, if you just tuned in, between Brian English and Craig Robinson about how much the jurisdiction of the electors to a constitutional convention would how much their jurisdiction is limited in terms of just rewriting the entire Constitution. And probably the answer to this question, which is something I think we need to investigate the next few months, probably the answer to this question is going to determine how I'm going to vote on that come November. Because if you can show me that the Constitution really limits the jurisdiction of the electors, I might be persuaded to vote for it.
I voted for it in 2000 just because I'm that kind of guy.
And if they are limited to just amending the current Constitution, that changes the debate entirely. But
I think the language has to be explicit.
Exactly. And to think that we can trust these folks up there to not take more power than what's currently in here has been refuted by the way they've acted over the last several months.
That's why you send the mob. That's why you send the
and,
mob.
Hey, if we can limit their jurisdiction, then I'll be in favor of the mob.
All right.
I'm all in favor of that. Let's move on. Let's get to another question here. Is Bob Vanderplas's executive order proposal an unnecessary step in passing a marriage amendment, and does it set the precedent for future governors to have too much power? Craig.
Yes. Period. End of sentence. I think it scares me, to be really honest with you both. And Steve, I know this is your baby, and I know you're proud of it, and you do all that. But it really, really scares me in terms of expanding the executive office to give them this sort of power. Nowhere in our Constitution does it give the governor this right, and I think that we should thus explore the options that the Constitution gives the people of Iowa to amend their Constitution.
If you want to talk about expanded power, look at what the court did on April 3rd. they took power upon themselves that they have no constitutional right.
No, are you saying that it gives us the ability then to expand the executive power?
Let me finish. Your question, Steve, was, is this necessary? And I would say no. It's not necessary, but it's a great idea. And this is why. Because what it does is it says this phony baloney new definition that the court created out of thin air and enforced with their own authority is not going to be the law of the land. And all it does is put a stay on that until the right branch of government, which is the legislature, takes some sort of action. And what we haven't said, I don't think we've said it on the air, we've had this discussion during the breaks. Right now, we don't have anybody in the legislature beating their chest and saying, this is our job, Supreme Court. You took our job, and you don't have any right to do it. And the Constitution allows you certain things. And so if we take what you did on April 3rd and take the legal parts of that out, the best we can come up with is there's no legal definition of marriage in the state of Iowa. But there is no authority for the courts to do what they did. And so for a governor to step up and say, until the legislature takes some action, we're going to use this language that needs to be changed according to the court's opinion. But you know what? If the other two branches of government, the legislature and the executive, come back and basically say to the court, go play in the street, we're going to repass DOMA, they can do that. They
and
have the authority to do
we
that.
We need a legislature that would pass it.
And a governor who will stand up to the courts. And right now,
but
this is
that
the best idea.
On a merry-go-round?
I have sat only if you're willing to keep kneeling at the feet of the judges. And I've sat down with lots of the candidates.
So game plan it out for me. I want to understand how it works.
Okay.
How does it work?
I asked Terry Branstad, who's going to come down off that bench and enforce this? Because he talked about this happening with an education issue when he was governor before. And I said, which one of those justices was going to get off the bench and come over to Terrace Hill and force you to do this? And he stuttered and he stammered and he couldn't answer my question. And he said, I don't think I understand what you're saying. And I said, well, they're a branch of government. The executive is a branch of government. Who was going to come make you raise taxes to increase school funding when the state was in such dire straits? Who among those court justices was going to do that? And after some thought, his best answer was, well, I may have been looking at impeachment as a result. And that, if that were the case, there's your vote. And then it goes right back to the legislature.
But, okay, but the judge isn't ever going to, we know that. The judge isn't going to come down, but you're going to have people sue you, right?
Who?
I will suggest that the Polk County recorder will probably sue the governor.
And what are they going to do about it? They go back to the courts, they get another opinion,
and
who's
gonna
going
say,
to enforce
they're
it?
They're
going
to say, I don't take an oath to the governor, I take an oath to the Constitution. And please tell me, where in the Constitution is marriage defined?
And the governor takes an oath to the Constitution, not to the Supreme Court. How are they going to enforce their will?
How does the Constitution describe the governor of Iowa?
The governor, the supreme executive power in the state should be vested in the chief magistrate, who shall be styled the governor of Iowa.
Chief magistrate, definition.
Definition. Let's go to Black's Law Library Dictionary. Okay. The highest ranking official.
Ready with this one.
The highest ranking official in government, such as a king in a monarchy, a president in a republic, a governor in a state. Mm-hmm. The term, also termed chief magistrate, a local official who possesses whatever power is specifically in the appointment or statutory grant of authority.
So
look,
this provides no
supremacy over the courts. It doesn't say that
nobody
the governor
has said
is,
that this
the
is
governor,
a supremacy over
the
court.
Chief magistrate is the highest administer of the law in the state of Iowa. Do we agree on that?
It means he is to execute the laws, not
what is the law?
Not interpret them himself.
What is the law?
The law is void in this case.
So we have no marriage law.
Correct.
Okay. So
we have no DOMA.
So why
we
are we handing out?
Why are we handing out marriage certificates then?
Hey, good question.
Okay. All right, so we okay. So,
what are you going to do? You're going to get sued. You're going to get sued. Someone's going to make the argument.
You're going to get sued with your marriage amendment, Craig, because that's going to be in a federal court in 10 minutes.
Now, wait a minute. You're going to issue this executive order. Mm-hmm. A county recorder or Mike Ronstall and a host of gay activist groups are going to sue the governor.
Right.
They're going to come in and they're going to make the case that the governor is actually legislating that DOMA is still valid. In fact, they're going to argue that he is legislating through this executive order. Mm-hmm. And what we have seen when this has happened twice before in King versus Vilsack and King versus Culver,
it's not the same thing at all.
If it is deemed that they are legislating, and I think that they will.
How would he be legislating to say we're not going to enforce the court's law?
Because you are trying to institute a part of the code that has been deemed void.
No, he's not trying to do anything. He's just saying we're not going to treat this court opinion as if it were law.
We're not going to enforce a court opinion if it's the rule of law. A question that an hour ago we all here sat here and agreed, the court's ruling does not have the force of law. The governor is simply going to say, I am the chief magistrate.
It basically said, though, there is no DOMA law.
Okay, then we guess we don't have any marriages, I guess, until the legislature redefines what the law is. I'm all right with that solution.
And the
if you're okay with that, I'm okay with that.
The executive order is specifically designed to put this back into the power and into the hands of the people.
But if the governor had this power, why wouldn't our founders, why wouldn't this be explained to us in our Constitution?
Because they did not anticipate that we would come to an era. This is a debate we've had. We've done a lot of discussion on this show with this for months now, looking at our founding fathers. And they never anticipated there would come a point in time when the people of a nation founded on the idea of no taxation without representation would knowingly and willfully surrender their freedoms to a body whose people and magistrates they largely did not elect.
So where has this been done before?
You're basically looking at the Emancipation Proclamation as essentially the force of an executive order, mm-hmm. which essentially was the and that's actually far more activist than what Bob Vanderplaats is proposing. That was Abraham Lincoln essentially saying that we're just going to end it by fiat. We're going to end slavery by fiat, basically.
Okay, I have a question.
That's more
for
in
you.
Line of what Tom Vilsack
okay,
did, actually.
I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
So are you okay with President Obama stepping in? The Supreme Court just made a ruling mm-hmm. that he vehemently opposes. Can President Obama come in, step in, and say, let's put on the brakes here, folks. We're going to put a stay on this sucker till the House and until Congress has a chance to reinstate McCain-Feingold on corporate contributions. Do you support that? Yes or no?
Do I think the U.S. Supreme Court has the right to order the other two branches of government to do its bidding? No, I don't.
In this case, this is a real-world example.
Agree with the court's opinion?
No.
I agree with the court's opinion.
Does Obama have the right to issue the same sort of thing that Vanderplaats is advocating?
Absolutely, he does.
Then here's why this scares me.
It's an opinion.
Here's why this scares me. Let's take a different scenario. Finally, we get a court to rule Roe v. Wade to be unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
President Obama is in there, and he has a Democratic Congress and a Democrat Senate. Okay, and he says, no, we're going to stop, and the legislature's going to pick this up, okay? They're going to pick this up.
And it's called the Freedom of Choice Act. They've already written it.
Okay.
It's in Congress.
And so the court has ruled that abortion is wrong and illegal. Obama says, stop. You're fine with this because this is the same thing Bob Vanderplaats is going to do it. And to an you know, and then you're going to ask, how is he going to enforce
those,
it? He's the executive. He's the commander-in-chief, and
Craig,
he gets to
Craig,
enforce it.
We have elections. If the people don't want a president performing that way or acting that way, they get to vote him out of office.
I don't want to give
they have
any
a
executive.
Legislature.
I don't
they
want
have
any
a
legis- executive. So
you'd rather
have
hold on a second, Brian. You'd rather let the courts have it? You'd rather let the courts have that power and
I
just
take
it from us
and
surrender
to them? I would rather us use our constitutional rights. Hey, I want to play by the rules. I want to play by the rules, Steve.
So play by the rules? The rules that the chief magistrate doesn't enforce a court
that
opinion?
Just means he's the governor.
What does that mean to you?
It means he's the governor of the state of Iowa.
Chief magistrate has no power, you don't believe.
He is the governor. He's in charge of the
He doesn't command the National Guard. He doesn't sign bills into law. He has absolutely no power at all?
No, he has those powers.
Okay,
I don't disagree with that.
Is there any other office given the title of chief magistrate?
So you're
and
telling
yes, Rebecca,
me,
I know we have to go to a break. Lynn can wait to do the traffic for one damn time.
Once
it'll be my show and not traffic and Dace interrupting the traffic report. Go ahead.
You're telling me that you want a president of the United States, you want President Obama to have these same powers.
No.
Where he can nullify Supreme Court decisions and have his Congress act.
They're opinions. That's all they are. They don't trump the will of the people. What I want are the two branches that we elect to make the law.
I don't want people I don't elect
to make laws that I have to live under. That is the most un-American concept I can ever envision. If you don't like the way President Obama is conducting affairs, vote him out of office. That's why we have elections. If you don't like what Bob Vanderplaats' executive order does, you don't like what Tom Vilsack did, vote him out of office. That's why we have elections. I thought
precedent.
You trusted the people, Craig.
I do.
Why
trust
not trust the
people.
The people to say, you know what, I don't really
because
like the fact that this
don't
branch
elect
overrided
a dictator.
That.
The people don't elect a king.
You're right.
That is
they're
why.
That's what we have up at the state Supreme Court. And they're appointed by governors and presidents. That's what we have now.
I'm not willing. We already have one. I don't want to create two branches of government who act like dictators in the state.
I don't see a governor saying, I have to enforce the law. You can't define for me what the law is. so I don't know what to enforce. So we're going to have an executive order until the legislature sends me a law telling me what the law is. Why is that being a dictator? That you don't think the courts are being the dictator by trying to impose their ruling on
anyone
else?
I'm saying nowhere in the Constitution is the governor given that power.
He's the chief magistrate of
Iowa. That doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything.
Steve, he is the governor. He is the head of the executive branch.
Right.
I think you're reading too much into the words chief magistrate.
Okay, you just gave me the definition. It sounded pretty impressive to me. You mean to tell me guys leave $450,000 a year jobs for not very impressive positions?
Hey, there are awesome powers connected to this. I think you are willing to give them even more, which scares me as a conservative.
I see him as giving me my power back. He's telling the court they don't get to make the law for
the
people that didn't elect
them.
Until the
next guy comes in, Steve, and then we're going to be up in arms. You would be up in arms if Obama had the military out there enforcing abortion laws. You would be up in arms. They already do.
They already do.
You would be up in arms if the Supreme Court overruled Roe v. Wade and Obama said no and sent the military to say,
the truth,
suck it up, I'm the executive, ha ha. Elections have consequences.
No, actually, if we get into that arena, we'll actually win that arena. The reason they use the courts, Craig, is so they don't have to make those decisions.
They don't have to pass
those laws. That's why they're doing it the way they do it, so that we don't have the say. I would like someone to step in and say, we're going to put the power in the debate back where it belongs, which is within the branches that the people actually elect. That's all I'm saying.
I'm just saying you have to do it the right way. That's all I'm saying.
I think this is the right way.
If it was the right way, I think it would be explicit within our Constitution to do so.
Is David Barton an idiot?
No, I don't think David Barton's an idiot. But you know what? I mean, these are the debates he had either. I mean, these are the debates they had when setting this up. They were scared of a too powerful executive officer of the state.
Right.
David and now you Barton don't think cites the Federalist Papers, but let's look at the Constitution.
You don't think they'd be scared now if a court's having this kind of power?
They would be terrified of the courts having this power. I'm not saying that they wouldn't be. I'm saying that there are ways that we should go, and we should go the fair ways, and we should go through a constitutional amendment through the legislature or a convention.
Okay. Now Rebecca Len can do his traffic.
I like it, you.
You're listening to Dace in the Afternoon.
Did you eat a lot of paint chips when you were a kid?
On News Radio 1040 WHO.
You're listening to at least the third or fourth best show on this radio station. It's Dace in the Afternoon on News Radio 1040 WHO.
All right, we got time for final quick comments here. Should have picked a night when we didn't have Hawkeye basketball. We could have done this another hour because I think Rebecca's just having so much fun. Brian, quick comment to close it out. Go ahead.
Still oppose the Constitutional Convention. I don't think it's well enough defined for people to understand and to know for sure what would happen and what would come out of that. Absolutely support the idea of an executive order and think that it puts the power back in the hands of the people. And the question we didn't get to is the IFPC strategy, and this is so much bigger than any one candidate. That's ridiculous to say that we've hung it on one candidate.
All right, Craig, since you came in here outnumbered, you get the last word.
Thanks, Brian. Look, I think that the Constitution clearly gives us two routes to go to amend the Constitution, and I think we would all agree that the problem we have is that marriage is not defined within our Constitution, and thus we need to do something about it. The Constitution is very clear about the ways that we can do so, and I think it sucks that we have to follow the rules, but I think we should follow the rules because I'm scared if we bend the rules, who's going to shove it down our throats the next time?
All right, guys, thanks for coming in. I'm sure this won't be the last time we're going to do this. Until tomorrow, Isaiah 61.